May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of the 15.
Keep your eye on the clock and we'll try to help.
Thank you very much.
And please keep your voice up.
May it please the court, Mark Regan for, it's pronounced Gallant, Donna Marie Gallant, who is the claimant here. This is also a Social Security case. It's both a medical improvement case and a disability case. Ms. Gallant is a young woman who went through a catastrophic auto accident in 2008. She sustained a traumatic brain injury in that auto accident, combined with some pre-existing mental health problems that she was experiencing at the time. That led to the original decision that she was disabled under Social Security standards. As Social Security's been trying to decide whether she continues to be disabled, it had before it a number of neuropsychological examinations. There was one examination which the administrative law judge deliberately decided to give no weight to, not little weight, but no weight. That's one of the issues that we are focusing on now. And also there was evidence in the record about Ms. Gallant's continuing problems with headaches and inability to concentrate. The mishandling of this evidence at the administrative law judge hearing has contributed to two problems. First, there's an incorrect comparison of Ms. Gallant's current condition with the condition at the time the disability decision was made. Second, there is an incorrect assessment of her residual functional capacity at the time of the hearing. That incorrect assessment led to the hypothetical questions being phrased to the vocational expert, leaving out problems that her mood disorder imposes on her ability to work, and leaving out her need for breaks and quiet time if she suffers from headaches. So there are two basic problems, one with medical improvement, the other with current disability. To look at what was disabling in the original decision, the most recent decision that's being used for comparison purposes, we need to start with the reasons why she was found disabled. And there is agreement with the administrative law judge and with Social Security now as to where to find that. That's at pages 125, 126 of the record in Social Security's large volume. It's also pages 125 and 126. There's a reference to mental health visits. There's a reference to the effects of the traumatic brain injury being assessed in the context of a pre-morbid psychological history significant for depression and PTSD, mentioned by the administrative law judge in his decision, and that her adjustment prior to the accident was poor, that she was homeless, that she was couch surfing, that she needed extensive family support in order to deal with hassles and stress. And then Social Security makes the decision that, combined with the effects of the traumatic brain injury, this is what justifies disability. A lot of pre-existing problems that my client was experiencing at the time.
That was when? What date was that?
That assessment was in 2009. The accident was in 2008.
And so what has to be found now as a takeoff point is you have to compare her medical condition then and on the cutoff date.
On the cutoff date, which is in 2012.
And there has to be a change in the medical condition.
There has to be a change.
Did the ALJ ever make that comparison?
The ALJ did make the comparison, although, as we point out, the ALJ used the wrong date for the initial comparison.
All right, but aside from that, where did he make the comparison?
The comparison is throughout the decision, although I will say this, the administrative law judge spent more time dealing with what he viewed.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you. Could you speak?
I'm sorry. The administrative law judge spent more time dealing with what he viewed as the current disability findings than he did with what had happened
before. The medical condition, as I understand it, before you get to function, the medical condition from 2009 and 2012.
With respect to physical medical conditions, By the time Social Security made its initial decision, there was not much physical limitation that factored into it. She'd been in a terrible car accident. She'd lost her baby, but she was on her way back so far as physical disability. And throughout this, I think we've been dealing with the idea of limitations to sedentary or light work, and that's discussed by the administrative law judge right near the end of the decision on whether it's sedentary or light work. But the point being that when you're looking for evidence of improvement from 2009 to the time the administrative law judge selected, what you really see is not much physical improvement. That really doesn't factor into it, but what you do see is a failure to inquire adequately into the reasons why the claimant's mood disorder has not improved. She testified about this. The administrative law judge didn't like the testimony. She went through a number of neuropsychological examinations. The examination that's principally at issue here was done at about the time of the hearing. It was to the effect that if somebody is having trouble with depression, mood disorders, and has had a TBI, that the TBI, according to the literature, and according to the doctor's examination of Ms. Gallant, the TBI is something...
Mr. Argan, it's hard for me to translate. Traumatic brain injury, right?
Yes.
Okay. You guys have this code you talk in.
Okay. Yes. And I'll try to stay away from the code as best I can, Your Honor. The traumatic brain injury has continuing effects on somebody's ability to recover and adjust to various things going on with her, including mood disorders. So what this neuropsychological examination said was, I have looked at prior examinations. My results from testing are about the same as the prior results. I need to call to your attention that there is this continuing problem with mood. And that was the examination presented to the administrative law judge, the most recent one. And that was the examination the administrative law judge said, I will give this no weight.
Yeah, I had trouble understanding why the ALJ, this is Dr. Cherry's report, that very long report.
Yes, Your Honor.
It appeared to me that the ALJ gives it no weight because there's some testing results in there with numbers and so on that make it look as though, that say as to those tests that she's basically average and normal or even to some in some fashions high functioning. And as I read the ALJ, he's saying, well, if that's true, I won't believe anything else that Dr. Cherry puts in there in terms of mood disorder and memory and so on. And then Dr. Cherry writes a letter, later letter. He gets really mad, like, can't you read or don't you believe me?
I can't speak for Dr. Cherry here, and I won't try, but what Dr. Cherry...
Well, I shouldn't say he's really mad. He objects in fairly strong language to the ALJ's treatment of his report.
Yes. From Dr. Cherry's perspective, the testing results that Dr. Cherry provided are consistent with testing results from earlier neuropsychs. So for the administrative law judge to say, I'm giving this no weight partly because of the testing results, the response to that is a reason for throwing out the earlier neuropsychological exams too. So that's...
As I read Dr. Cherry, he says, having these testing results is fully consistent with the other things I'm telling you.
Yes, that's exactly the way that that exam is listed, which means that the first reason that the administrative law judge selected for not giving any weight to Dr. Cherry's examination is simply a non sequitur.
He just doesn't believe Dr. Cherry's professional view that these tests can give you this, and these other things may also be true.
I would put it a little differently, Your Honor, that the administrative law judge did not believe that what Dr. Cherry had to say about the effects of traumatic brain injury on mood disorders, whether pre-existing or things that arose after an accident. The administrative law judge didn't believe that the statements about mood disorder should be taken at face value or accepted. That is one of the things that we think constitutes reversible error, that what we would ask you to do is to send this back to the administrative law judge so the administrative law judge properly can evaluate what's going on with the mood disorder. Because what the administrative law judge left himself in a position of doing was focusing on this as if it were mostly about cognitive impairments experienced by Ms. Gallant, and whether or not her test results on cognitive testing are improvements from what they would have been at the time of the accident. And that's not what Dr. Cherry set out to do. That's not what the earlier neuropsychological examination set out to do either. This is an issue where what is disabling for Ms. Gallant, what's disabling for Ms. Gallant is difficulty getting along in the workplace, frustration, losing concentration, and also the effects of her headaches. So by saying no weight to Dr. Cherry, the administrative law judge took the position where he did not have to factor mood disorders or headaches and the need for breaks into the hypothetical question he ultimately asked the vocational expert. That hypothetical question was focused only on what I will call cognitive impairment problems, the need to have the type of work where there are 1 to 3 step instructions, and not in there at all is anything to do with need for supervision, to be careful in the workplace, need for getting along with coworkers, need to take breaks, need to be what Dr. Woods described as being in a quiet room and alone and able to recover from the headaches.
Okay, now you're down to a little under 3. Do you want to save?
At this point, we've briefed the issues of credibility and we've briefed the issue of what the hypothetical question said. I will reserve additional time.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Christopher Brackett on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. And from what it sounds like, the Court's questioning is its concern is really with the opinion of Dr. Cherry. And,
that's part of it, but I'm also concerned with the question of whether the ALJ made the proper comparison of medical conditions as of 2009. And I'm not. I understand there was a typo problem, but that's not what I'm talking about. In April of 2012.
Well, I think the Court will find a review of the ALJ's full decision shows that he did consider all of the impairments that were available or that were applicable to this case.
What? I'm sorry?
The ALJ did consider all of the impairments that were used at the comparison point decision and then as medical improvement occurred.
As far as I could tell, there's a paragraph in which, the only paragraph in which he did this is a paragraph that reads something like this. I'm trying to find it just a minute. The medical evidence supporting a finding that as of April 12, 2012, there's been a decrease in medical severity of the impairments present. This is a medical severity question, right? And this is what he says. The medical evidence of record reveals a decrease in treatment. That doesn't demonstrate a decrease in medical severity. Moreover, neuropsychological testing revealed no more than minimal limitations, but that's not a comparison. And furthermore, the claimant's treatment records reveal no clinical evidence of significant mental impairment-related limitations. That's not a comparison. So where's the comparison?
The comparison occurs over the course of the entire decision. It starts off discussing the comparison point. decision and the impairments that were considered then, then the impairments that the claimant has now. And then the ALJ makes this finding that medical improvement occurred, and then as we progress through the decision, it shows his medical analysis, his analysis of the medical evidence as
well,
that
he's
continues.
Analyzing the medical evidence of now, but he's not really comparing it to the medical evidence from then.
Well, he's considering the evidence that is available now and back then, and starting basically, I mean, he's considering evidence back from 2009, 2010, the evidence that led up to the comparison point decision, the evidence that followed. Now, there was very little medical evidence that followed the comparison point decision. We had a handful of counseling sessions scattered over a 3.5-year period. Then we had a neuropsychological evaluation from Dr. Fuller in 2010, where he found largely normal findings that there was really no mental limitation on working. Then we had the Dr. Holliday's opinion in January of 2012, where he said that her mood disorder is only mild, her PTSD is mild and resolving, and he found no barriers to the occupational functioning.
Yeah, but none of those are comparisons.
Well, I think the picture that's being painted with all of this evidence spanning the course of several years draws the comparison.
Yes.
And shows her improved functioning.
It may be implicating the propriety of the original decision, but it isn't drawing a comparison.
Well, it's showing that her functioning has improved.
It's showing that it's okay. It isn't showing that it's improved.
Well, it's okay now, and it was not okay before.
But where's the what's not okay then?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
First of all, I thought it's not functioning that they're supposed to be comparing. It's supposed to be medical conditions.
Severity, and the way they determine that medical improvement occurred is by a reduction in limitation in the residual functional capacity. And the initial finding was that her residual functional capacity did not allow her to sustain concentration and persistence based on these the TBI, the traumatic brain injury's effect on some pre-existing conditions, depression.
Do you want to address the Dr. Cherry?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Cherry. So Dr. Cherry was the third of three examining psychologists in the record that came in, I believe it was August of 2013. And Dr. Cherry's opinion was addressed squarely by the ALJ. First of all, it should be noted that Dr. Cherry did not really offer a vocational limitations. The ALJ points this out. He provided no opinion as to specific limitations that Ms. Gallant might have. His summary was basically that her most disabling limitation. Now, it's unclear whether he was considering disability in the context of Social Security versus some other compared like workers' compensation or ADA or something along those lines. But that doesn't play fully into the reasons why the ALJ decided not to give this opinion weight. That comes on page 38 of the supplemental excerpts of record. It's the 14th page of the ALJ's decision. First, he notes, and I have to take a step back here, because the ALJ is considering not just a mood disorder. He's considering the claimant's cognitive residuals from the TBI how that affects her functioning. So first, he notes that the neuropsychological testing, the measures of the cognitive functioning, were largely normal. She had average academic and intellectual functioning, and that was consistent with the earlier evaluation that the ALJ references, which was Dr. Fuller's evaluation in 2010. Showed largely the same functionings after a battery of testing. Second, Dr. Cherry reported no clinical observations in support of the opinion regarding the claimant's mood issues. That's where he starts to get into the mood findings. And Dr. Cherry's actual examination, and most of it consists of the testing that addresses cognitive functioning, but he makes very little in the way of observations of her mood functioning. He does not perform a mental status examination. He records the claimant's, what the claimant reports to him and what the claimant's mother reports to him. But basically, his only observation is when the patient described her mood as, quote, I don't know, normal, which appeared, quote, to quote Dr. Cherry, generally congruent with her euthymic presentation. And I'm focusing on euthymic when I say I'm quoting Dr. Cherry, that her mood was good at that time. She was appropriately sad when discussing elements of loss, like her car accident and those challenges that she had back in 2008 in the rehabilitation. The third reason the ALJ points to is that Dr. Cherry references some TBI literature, some broad tracts about assessing a claimant, assessing a patient who's had a TBI, and that it can in fact support mood disorders. Well, first of all, earlier on the ALJ does note that depression, such affective disorders, can result from a traumatic brain injury. But the ALJ points out here that it's not necessarily the case here. And his point really is that there's not that statement of TBI literature does not specifically address Ms. Gallant and her functioning and what has resulted from her TBI. Fourth, the ALJ points to Dr. Cherry's opinion. It was wholly unsupported by documented clinical findings from the treatment providers. Now, since the comparison point decision, as I mentioned earlier, there's just been a few counseling sessions. Typically, these arose in context of life stressors. She, Ms. Gallant was at odds with her parents in January of 2010 over who would be her representative payee, and went to counseling over that just to have someone to talk to. In September of 2011, her last treatment session before the cessation, she was feeling the stress of being a new parent, and it was coming up on the anniversary of her accident. You know, these are normal situations that would exacerbate a claimant's functioning, and even in these circumstances, there was very little objective findings that would support the disabling mood disorder. And fifth, the ALJ points to the absence of any supporting objective and clinical findings led the ALJ to conclude that this opinion was largely based on the claimant's subjective reports, which...
To back up again for a minute.
Yes.
All of this, I mean, this is, at least in my experience in terms of the cases I've seen, an unusual one because here they're trying to take her off benefits. And my understanding is that, and the whole analysis that you're making goes to whether she was, as if they were doing this ab initio, but they weren't doing it ab initio. So there's the predecessor, as my understanding is that there's a fairly rigid and technical, even if requirement, that the takeoff point be that there was a change. And that's what's really, medical change. And that's what both the ALJ and you are not doing very much with. In other words, maybe this was a weak case to begin with. Maybe she shouldn't have gotten, maybe, but what is there about what the circumstances were found to be in 2009 and what they're found to be now, and where did the ALJ do that other than in the three sentences I read you?
Well, as I think I didn't do a good job of explaining.
All you said was all the way through, but I didn't see it all the way through.
Well, early on, he explains that the time of the comparison point decision, the impairments of depression and PTSD, and we can see that he should have stated that there was a TBI involved as well. I think that the bulk of the decision, as he's discussing.
Tell me where you're reading from.
Oh, I apologize. It's page 27 of the supplemental excerpts of records. It's the finding of fact number 2. The ALJ goes through the what resulted at the comparison point decision and why she was found disabled. She would be unable to maintain adequate pace and persistence on a consistent basis.
I'm sorry to mess this up. I've got the ALJ. Give me the page number again.
I have the supplemental excerpts of record, page 27. I can try and dig that out of the appellant's excerpts of records, too.
I've got the we're looking at the ALJ decision, correct?
Correct.
Just give me the internal pagination on that.
On the page on the bottom right corner is 27.
27, okay.
And then it's a list of finding of fact and finding of fact number two.
Okay, I'm with you. Yep.
Okay, he addresses the comparison point decision, and the claimant had the medically determinable impairments, and then the ALJ states what these impairments and how they affected the claimant, that she was unable to maintain adequate pace and persistence on a consistent basis, unable to adequately cope with the routine stresses and hassles in the workplace.
Okay.
So there's
a list of findings, and there is no finding that her medical circumstances, comparing it says what was true in 2009 at the time of the CPD, and what was true on April 5th, 2012, but there is no comparison.
Well, I think the comparison is in the lays out in the decision and how these findings are presented. And it shows that her functioning now, or functioning as it progressed, was different than it was at the time of the comparison point decision.
But again, I thought that the functioning is secondary. First, he has to find a medical change.
Well, I think the lessening in severity of the medical impairment comes as a result of improved functioning. And I believe that's what he said under a few pages later. It's page 30. It says that, he discusses that there's medical improvement resulted in an increase in the claimant's residual functional capacity.
The only finding of medical improvement is the one I read you before. Medical improvement occurred as of April 5th. It's on page 30, 2012. And then what I read you before, decrease in treatment, neurocircular psychological testing revealed no more than minimal limitations and so on, none of which are comparative. So I don't know. It's just not here as far as I can tell.
Well, even Your Honor, when a decision like this is written with less than ideal clarity, the comparison can be drawn from the decision as it's written out holistically. And I think that's really shown in the discussion that follows the residual functional capacity finding, because the ALJ doesn't limit himself to simply what's happened since the secession date. He does address medical evidence, what little medical evidence there was that was derived during the period of disability. And this, it shows a timeline, a progression as our impairments resolved and as things improved over the course of three odd years, that the claimant's cognitive functioning improved sufficiently that testing showed very little limitation, and that her mood disorder improved sufficiently that it was just mild by the time of January 2012 when Dr. Holliday examined her on behalf of the agency.
Can you help me with something? I maybe should know this, but I don't. I'm on page 11 of Dr. Cherry's report, not his later letter, but his report. There's some numbers on the right hand at the bottom, either 893 or AER 115.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, in the middle of that page, there's a kind of a table, and it's headed ABAS-II summary. What is that?
I don't know what the letters stand for. It's just more of the code, if you will, from these medical cases.
You can't help me with the code?
I cannot. Just alphabet soup that we often see in these cases. It looks like it's a summary of the claimant's mother's reports to the client.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, because the paragraph before talks about the mother, but then ABAS II summary suggests that it's actually a test. I'm trying to figure that out. I can't tell.
I'm not helpful in that regard, Your Honor, and I apologize.
Well, maybe the other side will tell us. But
before it says the patient's adaptive skill development is indicated in the following table.
Right, and I'm trying to figure out where the information that produces that table is coming from. Because the first sentence in the paragraph talks about the mother. There's a suggestion that's based upon the mother's information, but that's only a suggestion based on the paragraphing. I'm trying to figure out if this is based on something other than what the mother says.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it's just what the mother says. I mean, that would be a reasonable interpretation of that. And
well, it would be a reasonable interpretation unless somebody could tell me what the code means.
Right.
Later on that same page, we've got diagnostic interpretation.
Yes.
The current neuropsychological test findings, da-da-da. So what follows is coming out of the testing, not from the mother. And as we go through that, I'll just cherry-pick a little bit. In the middle of that sort of paragraph at the bottom of page 11, evidenced a consistent pattern of subtle attention deficit. At the end of that paragraph, she evidenced, in other words, this is coming from the testing. This is not her sort of self-reporting. It's not the mother reporting. a relative weakness with regard to her low average range performance on attention, concentration. The next page, borderline range performance, one measure of auditory working memory, one measure of sustained attention, second measure of sustained attention. In other words, we've got clinical psychological testing, as he is doing it as a professional, testing that's showing these things. I don't see how the ALJ can be justified in giving that no weight, because the way the ALJ says there's no weight because it's inconsistent with the testing. Well, this is what the testing shows.
This is
a professional evaluation or diagnosis based upon the tests.
I see your point, Your Honor. I would say that these go to the cognitive limitations. Now, these were, I think Dr. Cherry himself acknowledged that they were consistent with the prior testing, and that's one thing the ALJ found.
I thought he understood that she didn't have cognitive limitations, in fact.
The ALJ?
Well, Dr. Cherry, he said repeatedly that her cognitive testing.
These are cognitive testing, the testing of memory and concentration and intelligence.
That's a different kind of cognitive. But in terms of her general intellectual functioning, he said it was average. Average range from verbal abilities and so on.
Sure, and I would point out that the ALJ did provide limitations that reflected, he may have rejected Dr. Cherry's opinion, but he noted Dr. Cherry's findings were the cognitive testing that this references were consistent with Dr. Fuller's opinion.
The main thing he said was that she had a mood.
Yes. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yes, it was the mood disorder that Dr. Cherry really relied upon.
Yes.
I assume I'm way over my time, and I apologize for that, but thank you very much, unless the court has further questions.
We'll let you escape on that.
Thank you.
May it please the court, unfortunately, I can't solve the acronym problem either as far as what the testing stands for, but I can speculate about why it follows the analysis of what my client's mother was talking about. There are sometimes reports and third-party function reports that are classified in terms of test results, and that's what I would suggest was happening here, that Ms. Abel described some things going on with her daughter, and that was then classified by Dr. Cherry into the table. That's what I think happened. But could be wrong. The more important thing is that there is very little in the administrative law judge decision, aside from the passage on difficulty concentrating and on depression, that actually describes what her situation was like at the time she was found disabled. So there is very little analysis in the opinion of improvement issues. There's simply not much there. What is there is as if this were a first-level decision simply describing what her condition was like at the time the administrative law judge was evaluating things at the hearing. That's what this is about, and so it leaves out the step of finding improvement. And so that is a reason to say to the administrative law judge...
So what's the net result then? Do we send it back?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the result we are asking for.
As I understand it, you at one point asked for this is an odd situation because you have, again, the baseline isn't no benefits, it's benefits. So has she stopped getting benefits?
She, in fact, stopped getting benefits before we went to court.
Before you did what?
Before this case went to court. She stopped getting benefits, I believe, during the state agency process leading up to the hearing with the administrative law judge.
Okay, and she's not getting benefits now. So if we sent it back, she would still not be getting benefits, presumably.
And we would be arguing about medical improvement, and we would be arguing, if necessary, about current disability.
I'm sorry?
We would be arguing about current disability, I would say both at the time of the hearing and now.
I see.
It would be back before the ALJ, and one would hope he would take better account of the improvement analysis and of the mood disorder in the next set of proceedings that he goes through. There are no further questions. The red light is blinking.
Yes, thank you very much, both sides. Gallant versus Berryhill submitted for decision. We've got two remaining cases. We'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back for the last cases.